Hello and welcome to the Centre for Cities podcast. The Centre for Cities is the first port of call for independent research and policy analysis focusing on UK city economies. For more information on this series or our broader research and events programme, please visit www.centreforcities.org.
Hello and welcome to the Centre for Cities' latest podcast. My name is Ellie Thomas, and in this episode we'll be discussing the current state of smart cities in UK cities, looking at what's been achieved so far, what cities are doing now, and what the future challenges are likely to be in delivering smart cities. There are various ways of defining a smart city, but one way of understanding it is as a process by which cities use new technology and data to improve the delivery of services and to address the various economic, social, and environmental challenges that they face. The idea of the smart city has been around since the late 90s, but it gained real traction after the 2008 economic crisis, particularly because with limited public resources, data and technology can help cities to provide services more efficiently, as well as building in resilience to future challenges and fostering active engagement with citizens. Over the last few years, cities across the world and in the UK have launched a range of smart cities initiatives. In the UK, citywide projects such as Future City Glasgow, Smart City Bristol, the Leeds Data Mill and MK Smart are just a few examples of where cities have sought to capitalise on what open data and technology can offer. In this episode, we'll be reflecting on why we've seen such an interest in smart cities in the UK, on what successes and progress we've seen so far, and what, in a field that's still very new, our future challenges are likely to look like. At the Centre for Cities, our research aims to work with cities to support this agenda and to share best practice in how data and technology can help them to achieve their objectives and to support economic prosperity. To discuss the current state of smart cities, I'm delighted to welcome our two speakers today. Firstly, we have Ben Unsworth, Data Solutions Engineer at the open data solutions provider, Socrata. Ben has previously worked across a number of councils. I'm also joined by Enrico Motta, Professor in Knowledge Technologies at the Open University and the Director of MK Smart, Milton Keynes' flagship smart city project. MK Smart uses an open data platform to innovate in transport, energy and water management, as well as education, innovation and engagement. So Ben, over the last few years you've seen an increasing number of clients from cities over other organisations looking to establish open data platforms. What do you think lies behind this interest that cities have had in open data?
I think cities are quite uniquely placed in just how kind of dense they are with regard to populations and businesses, and also the kind of sense of identity that a city has. And quite often we see across all of our government customers we work with kind of from national down to local government. But quite often cities do have a very particular identity. A very clear, I guess, kind of political ambition from local government in terms of driving where that city wants to get to. And so while we do see a lot of innovation across, as I say, all kind of levels of local government, cities in particular have been, I guess, one of the first to really jump on open data and the kind of smart cities agenda.
And what do you think that they see the value of open data being within cities specifically?
I think it really does vary across cities. We work with a lot of cities in the United States who, for each of those, they focus in some very, very different areas. And when cities adopt open data programs, I don't think even they can guess where the kind of results might come. So, we've seen some incredibly interesting projects that range from, easier ways for landlords to know when their kind of building licenses and permits need updating, through to helping local people see health scores on restaurants, when they're looking for somewhere to eat, and anything in between as well. So, the motivations maybe grow from a desire to be transparent and to drive some kind of economic growth, but exactly where these particular kind of, I guess, returns on their investment in open data are going to come, it can be tricky to guess.
I think it's quite interesting that the UK has been a bit slower on the uptake maybe than some of the US cities in this agenda. I wonder if either of you have an explanation for why that might be and what lies behind the UK's recent interest. Enrico, I mean, why do you think Milton Keynes has become involved in this quite recently?
Well, I'm not so sure that maybe UK as a whole has been a bit slower than the US, but certainly a place like Milton Keynes, I would say, has been at the forefront of this agenda now for a few years. Maybe it was a little bit under the radar, primarily because they didn't have very high-profile projects until, let's say, a couple of years ago. But, I mean, you know, when you talk about Milton Keynes, you have to understand Milton Keynes, in essence, has always been a city of the future. You know, it was a new town that was set up according to pretty radical urbanistic criteria. So, but of course, some people agree with you know certain solutions, disagree with certain solutions. But the nice thing is that has created a culture also in the council, in the actual administration of the city, that is very much forward-looking. So it was obvious that as the technology, you know, progresses, certain opportunities were created by the technology, and at the same time, certain challenges, for example, like in the case of Milton Keynes, congestion, problems with transport. You know, Milton Keynes station had no problem with congestion simply because it was laid out on, you know, using this grid layout in some of the American cities. So there was this sort of interesting convergence of opportunities and challenges, which meant that the smart city agenda became more and more important, and now is actually a key part of the strategy of the UK Council. So it's not something that has been picked up in a sense, in a casual way, a random way, or simply as a reaction to the fact, oh, there are some smart cities developments, you know, left and right, let's do something. I would say it's something that I would say is really part of the DNA of the city, and this is what's really exciting for us in working in Milton Keynes. It's a great test bed for these ideas.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting, and it's clear that Milton Keynes has always had a sense of being a future city, and this is a way that they can get on board with that. Ben, do you have a perspective on what some of the other cities might have lying behind that desire to be involved in smart cities?
To the question you just asked Enrico as well, I think the United Kingdom has actually led the way in open data in a number of respects. But I do think that the kind of adoption by cities has lagged a little. If you look across the United States, I think certainly the 10 largest cities all have pretty thriving open data programs, and a lot of the smaller cities as well have invested quite heavily in getting the kind of their data infrastructure in place. I guess I could speculate as to why that might be. You know, a personal view is that the open data movement in the UK, I think, was a little adversarial. So councils saw it as having to open up information about how they spent money or how much their senior officials were paid. And, you know, again, this isn't a well-researched position, but maybe that you know, having worked in councils, I think my experience was it was quite hard to get past that and to really start to explore the huge benefits that do come from running a very ambitious open data program. So, you know, certainly we work with Bristol here in the UK, with Eindhoven in the Netherlands, you know, two very ambitious councils with very clear plans about where they're going to go with, you know, smart cities, Internet of Things, and how open data is a real kind of, I guess, a lifeblood, a kind of core part of their strategy for the future.
And do you think there are things that you see from the US and other European and international examples you've seen where UK cities could learn something?
Yeah, and I think it definitely works both ways. You know, there's a few US cities that do a particularly good job. I think kind of Chicago, New York, both have some kind of fantastic third-party developer communities who've grown up around data, but also, you know, New York City themselves use data and data analytics. You know, they consume the open data themselves as an organization to help kind of transform how they deliver services. But we're seeing some great stuff here in the UK. You know, I've mentioned Bristol. We've got a fantastic project just next door, the small city Bath. You know, hugely kind of engaged developer community who are building, you know, kind of applications and web services that meet the needs of their particular citizens.
And what kind of successes do you think they've seen so far coming off those platforms? Maybe Bristol, which has been running a bit longer than the Bath example.
Yeah, so Bristol's programme is incredibly ambitious. They launched their open data platform, and they wanted to publish 100 data sets in 100 days. I think they were well past 100 probably in less than a month. I think they maybe even surprised themselves when they saw quite how much data is there. And I know the Bristol is Open programme sets out a very clear vision for, you know, how Bristol as a kind of connected city with a very kind of high-speed network. They've also engaged with their kind of higher education and the kind of research lab that they have there, looking at, you know, the kind of new cloud technologies and how that might support a smart cities agenda. So yeah, very, very ambitious programme in Bristol.
And Enrico, how about in Milton Keynes? Do you feel, I mean, you have the data hub set up in Milton Keynes. How many data sets does it have now?
Well, we are, at the moment we are less than 100, but because primarily we're not really been worrying so much about numbers of data sets as primarily building the old infrastructure. But the number is going to grow very, very quickly. And the goals, the objective for the project is actually to have thousands of data sets by the end of the project. And I think we should be able to achieve that. Even though, you know, as we all know, it's not the number of data sets, you know, it's the quality of the data set. I mean, that's actually one important thing to emphasize about the work we are doing in Milton Keynes with the Data Hub. It is, in a sense, the key performance indicator is about constructing infrastructure which can support application development, you know, for data-intensive application, which can demonstrably be more efficient and more, you know, high quality than if you don't have our data hub. In a sense, you know, although it's kind of convenient to have all these repositories where you can just go and find the data, in theory, you don't need them. If, you know, a lot of kids build apps just by finding some data here, some data there, put them together and they build an app. So why do you need a data hub? There are a number of reasons, but a key reason is also that if you can create an environment, you know, a support environment around the data that makes it much, much easier and much more efficient to build the application, that adds a lot of value. The other thing is also providing the overall support infrastructure, because of course you need skills, for example, that not all SMEs or even, you know, bigger companies have. So that's one thing that we are doing in Milton Keynes. So although it's, the Data Hub is a nice advert for the whole project, the key point is that it's not just about computing infrastructure, it's about infrastructure, a support infrastructure, overall innovation infrastructure, which includes the Data Hub, but which includes also an innovation center at UCM Keynes, at Milton Keynes, education activities, engagement activities, etc. Because you need all of these to really go beyond that kind of piecemeal solutions, you know, a little bit here, a little bit there, but having something that then, you know, hopefully sustainable beyond the end of the project. That's really a key element of the MK Smart initiative.
Yeah, I'd absolutely agree with that. And certainly when we look across our most successful customers around the world and here in the UK, you know, the very best programs have not only a kind of platform that provides data, gives developers APIs to kind of, you know, query and build their programs, but also connects with, so in Eindhoven, they've got a great connection with the Technical University. So, you know, a data science module that the university runs is closely aligned to their open data program, which means the kind of next generation of software developers already know what open data is. They're engaging in kind of civic issues as part of their module. It you know, it's not just about tech, it's about democracy, it's about kind of engagement in local politics and in fixing problems where people live. And certainly we see that replicated in you know, New York through their Beta NYC group, huge levels of engagement. You know, Code for America have brigades, you know, around a lot of the cities we work with, which does just that. It provides that infrastructure that enables people to not just access data, but to think about the problems that need to be fixed. Because ultimately, you know, the reason for doing all of this is to identify the things that local citizens kind of need and help them access services more efficiently.
And that's also, you know, the exciting thing about these data releases, when they are data releases not out of context, but in a context in which there is a community, there are developers, there are education activities, etc., is that in a sense, it's all bottom up. You don't actually know what's going to happen, and that's kind of the most exciting thing. If I talk about MK Smart, we have some precise goals to do with energy, with water, with transport, etc. But the most interesting thing is that, okay, we make all this data available, we provide this infrastructure, we provide this support, we engage all these 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 SMEs. What's going to happen? And that's, you know, that's really exciting. That's very, very exciting. And that's, for example, something that I guess, I mean, Ben, you know more about this than me, but I guess in the US is happening, you know, this serendipity, this bottom-up initiative is happening a little bit more than maybe is happening in UK. But I think that's something that could change in the future as the infrastructure that is made available in various cities becomes more robust and more usable, effectively usable.
Yeah, no, absolutely. We're seeing a really, you know, an exciting new way of residents engaging with their local councils, which is a wonderful byproduct. You know, getting people interested in things that are happening around them. And just one other thing to add from Bristol, which is particularly exciting as a part of the Bristol is Open project. They're not just looking at the kind of technology side of things, but they've got a huge part of their work stream is about kind of culture and the arts, and they're connecting with an organisation called the Watershed there in Bristol to look at how data and technology kind of play a role within arts and culture and see where that goes and understand that a smart city isn't just about, you know, energy meters and congestion, but it's about the things people do as well when they're kind of living in a place.
And this, if I could just add, this is actually a really, really important thing, you know, because there's a lot of discussion about, you know, what are smart cities, and also, you know, there are people out there in local council say, oh, we should be a smart city too, what should we do, exactly. But the key thing, I think, is exactly what you were saying. I mean, a successful smart city, whatever you mean by smart city, is one where essentially technology and whatever is the local culture. You know, Bristol, you know, has a very specific identity in UK, a very specific culture. You know, is always associated with arts, with creativity, with the radical ideas, etc. While Milton Keynes maybe is more associated with you know, rational planning, you know, getting things well organized. And of course, I'm sure that Milton Keynes, the council, would like to be a little bit maybe more like Bristol, and maybe Bristol wants to be more like Milton Keynes. But the bottom line is that the initiatives that succeed are the ones where there is this perfect convergence between the ethos of the city and the way technology is used to foster the smart city agenda. And I think both Bristol and Milton Keynes, from two complete, you know, two rather different angles, maybe not completely different, but rather different angles, they really are great examples of how you mix, you know, local culture with technology to tackle the challenges. That's really great, I think.
I think that's a really important point for cities who might be looking to get involved and say, if they're looking to other UK cities as an example, maybe we would say there's a need for them to work out what they need from it and what they want to represent about their city. I think the Bristol example gives a really good case of where there are advantages in throwing out a data set and seeing what comes from it. But would you say there are dangers in that approach as well?
Well, I don't think there are. I don't think there are dangers in the sense that certainly there have been some studies that have shown that simply releasing data, simply making data available, has economic benefits. Simply, if you do nothing else, but you just make data available to business, to research, etc., value is produced. And we, as part of the case for MKSmart, we commissioned a study exactly on this point. And it was quite interesting to see that there was quite a good amount of evidence out there from a lot of research, both in UK and outside UK, that shows the value of simply of data releases. So one could argue that, well, if you don't do anything else, at least make your data available. Maybe something will happen. Of course, as we know, you want to, as we were saying earlier, we want to do a bit more. You want to provide a support infrastructure. You want to provide an environment in which things are going to happen. So I don't think there is so much a danger in the bottom-up approach. At the same time, you can say there is obviously a gap if a city invests in a smart city program or in technology, etc., without having some clear strategic view of what they want to achieve. That's really important. This again goes back to the previous discussion about the strategic view has to be linked to the challenges that a specific city has, and also maybe to the priorities, the culture, etc. So this is also a reason why I mean, there's a lot of debate, for example, about what is a smart city. I mean, personally, I couldn't care less. You know, I don't think it's a particularly helpful definition. It's like there is this famous line by Herb Simon, a Nobel Prize winner, that says, well, you don't define disciplines, you recognize. You know, you don't say, well, what is economy? Well, you can try to define, but it's actually much easier to recognize. So you recognize cities that are implementing intelligent smart city programs. You don't really need to define. So I think that's the key. You want to have a bottom-up strategy because especially in the medium to long term, may provide all sorts of success stories, all sorts of interesting things may happen that you have not anticipated. But at the same time, if you don't have also an element of top-down, if you don't know exactly, you know, what are the key challenges you're tackling, where is the money supposed to go, what are the key priorities, well, then you are not going that far, even though, as I say, that there is evidence simply releasing data actually has positive effects.
Yeah, I think that strategy point is really key, though, and to have a vision from all the stakeholders in a city on what they're trying to achieve in the long term as well as the short term with any kind of initiative, and to build those solutions into that strategy. I mean, can you tell us a bit about what's happened in Milton Keynes in partnership with the council and with their long-term strategy about what MK Smart aims to achieve?
Yeah, I mean, the council has very precise objectives in a number of areas. For example, like the rest of the UK, for example, he has objectives for reducing CO2 emissions. In fact, actually, the council, I think, if I'm correct, has actually more ambitious objectives for reducing CO2 emissions than the national standard. So that's already said, okay, how we are going to do that? And the interesting thing about Milton Keynes is that because it's a place that was designed for the car, that's really a very big challenge. Because if you have a car in Milton Keynes, transport, you know, going to A from A to B is quite complicated matter. There are a number of initiatives. As you know, Milton Keynes is one of the test beds for the driverless vehicles, and I think it is going to be May. In May, we're going to have the driverless pods in central Milton Keynes. And that's a nice example of how you get the technology to solve problems. Well, not to solve completely, but to start addressing problems that in theory are really intractable. So what do you want to, you know, to have good quality of life in a city? You want to have, for example, very large pedestrian areas. Now, the moment you have very large pedestrian areas, you start having a problem of mobility within the pedestrian area. So typically what happens is it cannot be too large. Otherwise, you need to have taxis and buses running in it. Okay, well, the solutions, for example, all the small pods, the small driverless pods, is a really nice solution. You know, they can go around the pedestrian area, allowing the pedestrian area to grow, at the same time allowing people, for example, you know, elderly people, people which, you know, people who may have a little bit of a mobility issue, to go freely from A to B anywhere in the pedestrian area, because of course the driverless pod is not on a rail, it doesn't need to follow a particular fixed route. And this is just one example. I can go on with that example. But the bottom line is that technology provides some opportunities, but you need to have a strategic vision about how you want to go about it. So the strategic vision of Milton Keynes is about the fact that in order to get people away from cars in a city like Milton Keynes, which was designed for cars, you need to come up with models of public transport which are much more flexible than the one you have at the moment. Because the one you have at the moment, where you have a bus that simply goes around the same route every half an hour, 40 minutes, 50 minutes, is not flexible enough to convince somebody like me, who has a car, not to use my car. But if, for example, if you have a bus that flexibly adapts its route to the current need, the people who actually need a bus in that particular moment, well, that becomes much more interesting.
Yeah, I think if we're going to learn anything from some of the smart cities kind of pilots that happened in South Korea and in the United Arab Emirates, it's that we really need to connect, as you say, with some kind of strategy, some kind of goal and objective for a community, you know, to understand the place, to know that cities are things that we live in. You know, they're not just places to drop huge amounts of technology into. For a little while, the Smart Cities agenda was almost entirely owned by some very large kind of technology companies. But actually what's great now is cities are taking that agenda for themselves. And doing absolutely the right thing. They're connecting it with their existing strategy. You know, they're thinking about, you know, what are the local kind of political objectives, you know, the local kind of elected, whether it's the mayor or the council, you know, what have they set out to achieve and how might technology help them get there? And having that kind of top-down strategic approach, which is great, but also creating that environment where people are able to from the ground up kind of engage with the program to request data from their local council or city authority, and to be kind of enabled to innovate and to test and to change and to challenge, to get people re-engaged in living in a city. And certainly we see at Socrata across, it's over 200 kind of customers we work with now. It's where that kind of, that coming together of a grassroots community organized kind of ecosystem, along with a city that is committed to open data, but for a reason. They have real problems they want to solve, whether it's kind of increasing economic growth or solving health outcome problems, improvements to transportation, the environment, whatever it might be, whatever's relevant for that city. Certainly where we see a little bit of both, kind of top down and ground up, and where those things can come together definitely lead to the most successful programs.
Yeah, this is a lot of success stories, and I think it's true that what we've seen so far has been really positive, and we're seeing some really good progress, especially in UK cities. But what we do know is those cities who have been doing it haven't been doing it for a particularly long time, and I wonder if we might be able to reflect a bit on what's going to happen in the long term for some of these strategies.
I guess I'd maybe challenge that a little and say perhaps they have, and it's only recently that we've kind of thrown this smart cities tag onto the things that they're doing. To Enrico's point about you you can name something by observing it. I think if we were to kind of cast our minds back to the introduction of real-time transport information, that's been in lots of cities for quite a long time actually, and that happened without the need for a smart cities tag on it. And so while it's great that we've got a way to describe some of this activity and to kind of coalesce support around it, I think cities have for a long time been looking at that intersection between service delivery and technology, and how technology might lead to kind of improvements for their residents.
But even if we throw the smart cities tag out the window, which maybe we should do, and look at it in that way, there are still challenges about what we're going to do in the long term. And some of these projects which are going on now are demonstrator projects or they're pilot projects, and there are real questions about how this is going to be sustained in the long term. Firstly, by what role councils and cities are going to take in that, and also by what role other private stakeholders are going to have in this.
I say this with a huge affection for local government, having kind of worked there for a long time. They're not always the most technically advanced or the kind of the most willing to take risks in some areas, but I do think that's changing, and I think that's changing quite quickly. The reality of the funding scenario that the local government faces means that there's a pressure now that there hadn't been 5 or 10 years ago, to look at the really innovative solutions and to be enabled to take some of those risks. To explore how new models of service delivery might work, and the government's incentivizing and encouraging that. So things like demonstrators and pilots and test beds are great, because they give that kind of, I guess, almost permission, but also some of the support, whether it's people, money, research, whatever it is, to help get things started and to help embed those within an organisation. And as long as these things are connected to some kind of a strategic objective, the kind of thing that Enrico's described about Milton Keynes, that Bristol have in place, we look at places like the London Borough of Camden, who have a very ambitious digital strategy that's completely intertwined with how they do all of their business as a council, and so I think in those places this will be a very sustainable real way to kind of to develop the new public services of the future, because there isn't another option. We don't have a plan B. It's kind of something we have to fix now.
Yeah, absolutely. I would also like to emphasize that beyond cities, there is also a government. And I think, when you talk about the long term, of course, we are talking about sustainability, we are talking about scale. And I think that's an area where also you need the UK as a nation to actually make a significant investment. So for example, if we talk about data, a lot of the data are come from sensors. So a key element is a scalable infrastructure for the Internet of Things, you know, what is called the Internet of Things, which is actually a little bit of a funny name, but let's stick to the, you know, to the current terminology. Well, that requires serious investment, and I think it would be nice to see the vision from the government to look at this issue not simply as an issue for, you know, a London Borough or for Milton Keynes or for Bath, but as a national issue. Therefore, you know, supporting infrastructure development, you know, large scale infrastructure development, you know, working together with the big technology companies to make this happen. Because, for example, historically in some other areas, we have been a little bit slow. Like, you know, if you talk about fast broadband, I had to wait 20 years to get fast broadband to my house. And I think that that has economic implications. So I think, you know, everybody, you know, if you look at, you know, if you read these reports from Cisco, from McKinsey, from all, you know, you know, the Internet of Things, the value of the global market is, I don't know, many trillion dollars. You know, numbers that actually I can't even make sense of. But the bottom line is that whether those numbers are correct or they're not correct, there is a huge opportunity. But the huge opportunity depends on the infrastructure being placed, the standard being placed, the interoperability being placed, the vision being placed. And I think for some of these things, you really have to go beyond individual cities, but look at the UK as a whole. So that's really important.
Yeah, I think we are starting to see some commitment towards that, and the budget was quite positive in that regard, seeing investment in the Internet of Things and driverless cars. We're seeing moves towards that agenda. Would you say we've still got some way to go?
There's always room to move, for sure. I'm also really encouraged to see recent announcement that Mike Bracken is going to be the Chief Data Officer for the UK. So, you know, we're really kind of important, you know, investment in terms of the leadership that we need around data at a national level, but also I hope Mike Bracken's kind of remit extends into local government as well, and understands the, you know, the kind of, you know, local government data is a part of this national infrastructure, and you know, we're kind of really looking forward to seeing, you know, how that leadership with regard to data from the very top levels of government is going to have, you know, have an influence, because we've certainly seen in the US cities with chief data officers and the federal departments now as well, who are kind of appointing people into this new CDO role, we're seeing some huge improvements in understanding the value of data as an asset, and the importance of using that both inside their organisations but also opening that out to any other third party who might be able to use it.
And this is also important because we tend to talk a lot about open data, because it's nice to talk about open data. But the reality is actually that certainly one challenge we are facing in MKSmart is that a lot of the data that's actually useful to develop the kind of solutions that we want to develop are not open at all. They are in private hands. So that's, again, that's another area where really, you know, progress can only be made at national level. So it was really good to read, there was recently a report on the Internet of Things by the chief scientific advisor to the government, Sir Mark Walpott. And one of the recommendations was exactly that there has to be a framework by which, for example, data that are owned, by transport companies, are released in a format that is then can be used, you know, computationally, if this is, you know, necessary for the public good. I think your report was pointing out, I don't know, many, you know, 60 different bus companies operate in London or something like that. Now, how can you have an intelligent model of transport, for example, according to this idea that I was mentioning earlier, you know, where the transport flexibly adapts to people or people flexibly adapt to transport, whatever, if the data are in 60 different companies and you have to negotiate with each separate company the data release. So, for example, you know, just to give you a concrete example, it would be not particularly difficult. For example, next time a train franchise is released or next time a bus franchise is released, that is part of the agreement. The government or the local authority requests the data about passengers, routes, all the elements of that particular transport sector to be made available, so that, for example, they can be integrated with other data to provide models of mobility. That would be a very simple thing to do. But again, it's not something, I spoke to the MK Council about this, and there's only very little that, MK Council can only operate with, in a very limited space. There has to be at the national level, there has to be frameworks in place that require data releases from private companies. And very often, it's not that these data are not released because these companies don't want to release them. It just, they've never been asked before. It's not part of the business model. They didn't even realize that this data could be valuable to somebody. So it is really important to go beyond the open data element and realize a lot of data are in private hands, and there has to be a framework that looks at the tension between public benefit and private ownership of data and legislates when these trade-off has to go into it towards the public benefit.
Yeah, I think that's a really key point and something that BSI are doing a lot of work on. I think it's going to be really key going forwards in developing these standards for data. Local authorities, I'd say, have a key role in procurement models in this as well, in maintaining those contracts which are able to take the benefit for the city to achieve those aims in open data.
Yeah, we're very encouraged to see a number of the local authorities we work with have made changes to their procurement and rules and standing orders. Now that they're running open data programs, and they're bumping into this problem where sometimes data lives within a system that's owned by a company, and they own the data too, which can create the kind of challenges you've described. So with a fairly simple change to some of their standing orders, they're now able, when these contracts come up for renewal. To just specify that any data, will be made available, it's open, it's accessible via an open API, whatever they need to do to be able to get that data out of whatever system and to share it, to make it accessible, and not just to kind of third-party organisations outside of the council. Quite often there's personal and sensitive data that needs to be used better, and to have mechanisms within the organisation to have access to and to share important information about service delivery to help kind of improve efficiency and ultimately deliver better services for people in an area. Really encouraged to see that and very important too.
Yeah, well, I think there's a couple of key challenges there. I wonder if, just to round things up, we might be able to offer two challenges from each of you, which we think are going to be the real obstacles in the way of smart cities and what we might be able to see to overcome those in the next few years.
Let me see. I mean, sadly, the wide, large-scale IoT infrastructure is a challenge. It's not an incredibly complex challenge from a technological point of view, although there is still some research and development to be done. It's a challenge because I think it is quite easy for things to develop in a way in which there is only limited standardization. So I think the challenge would be for industry and the government, for all the various stakeholders, to work together in such a way that there is both technological progress, but there is also a way in which this technological progress converges in a way that ensures interoperability. The other challenge, again, if we want to forget about sector-specific challenges, is really, I would say, the trade-off between privacy and the benefits that you get from providing more information about yourself in general, to have more information about people, and the same with the open versus closed or semi, or commercial data. I think there is quite a lot of tension there, and if we just focus, for example, on privacy, already there are a lot of scenarios where people are prepared to trade off a certain element of privacy because they get some advantages, for example, with the insurances, with the new tracking device, etc. But again, one thing is to do in one small, very circumscribed scenario. One thing is when your data starts circulating and they can be integrated with other data. And that's really, really big challenge. So, for example, one thing that we are looking at is having developing solutions that allow people to control the data in a more effective way, in the sense of being able to understand a bit better what data they are releasing and what can be done with this data. But it's actually quite a complex problem, and is a key problem because, of course, you know what these things are like. The moment data about rigor mortis are released, and then these data appear in the wrong place, then rigor mortis will be really unhappy and and will withdraw any consent to data release. And this is a challenge because, as we say, that if this trade-off, we can do a lot more with more data, but at the same time, you know, privacy has to be a safeguard. So it's actually quite a complicated scenario, simply because data can circulate in many different ways and be used in contexts which you had not thought previously.
Yeah, so infrastructure and privacy is Enrico's two biggies. Ben, how about you?
Yeah, I'd say getting data open can be quite challenging for a lot of organizations, but I think we've got so many examples now that open data is part of the lifeblood of a smart city. So it's a challenge that's worth taking up, and there's lots of great leadership across cities around the world now to help kind of give people the support and intelligence they need to just go ahead and do that. And the other, I guess, the other challenge for me as well is staying focused on the users, on residents in cities, and making sure we remember that we need to focus on what makes cities livable, and to solve the problems that people are facing in those cities, and it needs to be relevant to the place you live and the people who live there. It's not just a technology solution; it's part of a much bigger agenda about how we live.
Great. Well, thanks to both of you very much for joining me today. Thank you to Enrico Malta from MK Smart, Ben Unsworth from Socrata. Thank you very much for listening. And if you'd like to find out more about our research on smart cities, you'll be able to find it on our website at www.centreforcities.org.